So that's where the extra delay came from. The gentleman that asked to speak's home group is the Indiana Central Group. He's a member of the Low Mountain Highlands area of Narcotics Anonymous. He's a predecessor in our area. You might want to put the top on that. he was here when I got here, and one of the things that I know, he's dedicated to service, as you just heard. He's doing service even while this is going on. He's somebody whose recovery I respect, and had the pleasure of having him be not a member of the Unity Retreat Committee this year, but when he found out that I was going to chair the event, being in my first time, he said that, you know, any resources that he had, you know, he extended to me. I was truly grateful for that, you know, because it made it a real smooth transition for me. This gentleman is going to be speaking on the topic of relationships. I got a nickname for him. I call him Q-Tip, you know, and you'll see why when he comes up here. But from the Indiana Central Group, Rich L. is going to be speaking on relationships.
Recovering act, my name's Rich.
God, I hate stuff like this. Not only getting up here to speak sometimes, because like that disease wants to tell me I have nothing to share, but also what's going on right now with one of our members, because it scares the hell out of me, because this disease kills. And you know, one of the messages this program has is that those who work the program need not die from the horrors of addiction. I was just planning on coming out here today to listen, to get a message. And Eric came up to me with this thing and says, draw out a topic. I'm like, what for? He goes, you're speaking. I said, you didn't ask me. He said, I'm telling you now. So if it's okay with you, I'm going to take a moment here and invite my higher power and ask you to do the same. Because I want to hear what message he wants to hear from me today. I want to try to get out of the way. So we take a moment of silence and do that right now. Amen. Thank you. Like I said, my name is Rich, and I am a recovering addict. Relationships. Set up more chairs, because the relationship topics at every convention I've ever been to have been overflowing with people. Because I think somehow it's kind of like driving by an accident. You want to hear that shit that like you really don't want to hear, but you want to hear it anyway. And you want to hear who I did with who and who I did with the chicken and you know, all that other kind of stuff. But you know what? When I see the word relationships, that's not what I think of, at least not anymore. I truly believe that our lives are defined by the relationships we are in. When I was born, I became a grandson. I was a son. I was a brother. I became an uncle. I became a husband. I became a father. I found this fellowship and I became a member. I became a sponsee. I became a sponsor. And probably the most important relationship that I believe in my life today is that I'm a child of the higher power I choose to call God. And how I let those relationships into my life truly define the person that I am today. It's funny because I think one of the most important principles of this program is the fact that we can remain teachable. And when I got here, I didn't know a lot about any kind of relationship except what you were going to do for me. I was always on the receiving end of every relationship I was in. As I stuck around and I listened to some people and watched the way they lived their lives, I started to learn to be on the other side of that relationship at times. And I've heard it said a bunch of times that the drugs were only a small part of our disease, that the core of our disease is self-centeredness. And that was the relationship that defined my life till I walked in these doors. In a lot of ways, I was blessed. I didn't have to go to the depths that some people did as far as at least external things. I was still married. I still had a house. I still had a car. I still had a job. Sometimes people ask me, like, well, why did you bother to stop using? And I think that relationship with God is what it was about. He saw fit to bless me that not to have to lose all that stuff before I could find a new way to live. I first came into recovery at Christmas of 1989. I'd love to tell you that's my clean date, but it's not. Because on October 22nd, 1997, I chose to use one more time. All the things I had heard up to that point about spiritual bankruptcy, emotional bankruptcy, physical bankruptcy, the things I didn't understand came crashing down around me. And I started to understand what people were talking about. So I'd been here almost 8 years at that point. And truly, I thought I was cured. I only came here to help you sick people. And I hope I never get in that spot again. I know I can help other members of this fellowship, but I can't do that if I don't continue to help myself. I used that one night, and my wife came into the kitchen. And I can't even say I got high. I got stupid. I couldn't figure out how to get the lid off a soda bottle. And that's when she came to me and said, "You're using again, aren't you?" And one of the few good things that happened that night is I told her the truth. I said, "Yeah." We're getting ready to have our kitchen remodeled. And there's a spot next to my back door that I kind of want to save. Because when I told her that I was using again, she had a butcher knife in her hand. And it took her a couple of years to tell me, but she said it was a 50-50 choice whether it went into the wall or my chest. There's a hole in the wall. My chest is still intact. So, at least at that point, that relationship was gone at least good enough not for me to be dead. And I kind of want to save that hole. I never passed that hole. And every time I walk out my back door, I kind of take a look at it. Because I truly believe, but I don't remember where I came from, I'm doomed to go back there. This coming May, we'll have been married for 30 years. We've been together for 34. And sometimes I like to joke that I'm coming up on 10 years of being happily married, because it took 30 years to get them. But that's all part of that remaining teachable. Because I didn't know how to be a husband. When I picked that topic out a little while ago, of course, when I think of relationships, the relationship with my wife comes to mind quickly. And I started thinking about, like, why did I even, like, hook up with her? I met her my first day in college. We had a chemistry lab together, and we didn't like each other at first. Matter of fact, I went home and told my parents about this weird girl I met, and she did the same to her parents, and a little over a year later, we ended up going out. We had a lot of mutual friends, and I think part of what helped that relationship develop is that it didn't go right to that intimate relationship. We became friends for quite some time. And I think that's part of what has sustained that relationship through the bad times. I don't think I knew what love was about back then. You know, at some point I told her I loved her, and I think I meant it at that time, but I didn't know what it really meant. When I started thinking about that a little while ago, you know, I started thinking that, like, love was just a person that you could depend on. And I think that's what I was looking for. I was the youngest of four children, and when I was born, my foot was completely backwards and turned on its side, and they told my mother I'd never walk. So like I was a real spoiled kid, you know. Growing up, I had braces on and stuff like that, and anything I wanted, I would play that sympathy card, you know. And I got whatever I wanted, pretty much. My parents weren't wealthy or anything like that. My dad ran a little grocery store, and we lived in the back of that. And when I think about that relationship, you know, I don't really know what a functional family is, but I thought I had one. My mother used to tell stories about my dad being an alcoholic, but if he was, he was one of those ones that somehow managed to just put it down, because I never saw the man drunk. He would buy a case of beer and it would last for a year. I don't know about anybody else, but when I think of an alcoholic, that's not what I think of. But my older brother and sister are much older than me, 15 and 16 years older than me, and they told me some stories about things happened when they were growing up, and it sure as hell seemed like there was a lot of addictive behavior going on in that house with the rage and things like that. So I don't know if I totally buy into the whole genetic thing of this disease, but I think maybe there's something to it. So, you know, maybe that's part of why I became what I became. But the other word that comes right to mind when I think of relationships is love. And I'm not sure I knew what love was from that relationship with my parents. They provided for me. They were always there when I turned to them. But I truly don't ever remember hearing that they loved me. I think part of the reason I love getting the hugs in these rooms right now is that physical touch, that relationship, that part of the relationship was not part of how I grew up. So it's something I seek today. Since last October, when I drive my car, I don't listen to the radio. I do nothing but listen to speaker tapes. So I've listened to about 1,000 of them in the past year. And on my way to my home group last night, I was listening to a woman named Ann. I think she's from California. And she said there's two kinds of people in the world. There's cats and there's dogs. And she said she was a dog, and the person she was in a relationship with was a cat. Because a cat will just tell you what they need. But a dog always shows unconditional love. If you walk out of the room and come back in, that dog will act like you've been gone for a year. And you can repeat that 5 minutes later, and the same thing will happen again. And, you know, I think I like being a dog, you know. If I walk out of this room and I come back in and somebody hugs me, even though they hugged me 5 minutes ago, it feels just as good as the first time. You know, those are the things that feed my spirit. So many of those relationships since I've got here have, I guess they're like all relationships in life. They have their ups and downs. They have their good things. They have their painful things. This isn't my first basic text. For a while there, I thought I was the Gideon of Mene because I would take basic texts everyone in, and I'd end up leaving them in hotel rooms. But I think I've had this one for about 15 years now. And part of what's in this book are people that have been in my life that are no longer here. I don't remember when I first heard it, but I heard that one of the reasons we give a person a hug when we're leaving a meeting is we don't know if we'll ever see them again. And some of these people I can remember giving that last hug to. I don't even know how we got talking about it earlier, but I was talking about my very first sponsee. Oh, I remember. Somebody was talking about somebody who keeps coming in and out of the rooms. And I said, my very first sponsee, his name was Jeff Keller, and he always used his last name at meetings because he said he didn't care who knew what he was, who he was when he was out there, why should he care now that he's finding a new way to live. And for the first 6 months I knew Jeff, he came into our home group high every week. And he'd sit right by the door, and he looked like a deer caught in the headlights with those wide eyes, just looking for a reason to leave. But every week he showed up again. And back in 2003, he was on his way home from Virginia, and a 19-year-old girl fell asleep at the wheel of her car and hit his car head-on. His brother walked away from that, and Jeff didn't. At the funeral, his brother said to me, he said, Jeff only said one thing when he went to him in that car. And he said, tell him I love them. That was the first funeral I went to in this fellowship. And I saw an outpouring of love from the people in this fellowship to his family. I put an eternity coin into his coffin. I asked his son, I didn't know if they wanted what they wanted to do, if they wanted to leave it in there or not. And his son's name was Jeff also, and he told me, he said, if you don't mind, I'm going to take that out, and I'm going to give that to my sister, because she really needs this program. And like so much of the 12-step work that we do in other service here, you know, our job is to carry the message, not to determine who receives it. I don't know whatever happened to her, but I do know that at that point that she knew that her dad had found a new way to live, and he had developed a relationship with the people in this fellowship who truly loved him, and he gave that back. You know, it's weird. I just celebrated an anniversary last month, and I don't know, every year around the anniversary time, it kind of, I don't know, I get like in a weird mood and stuff, and I start reminiscing maybe a little bit, and the topic came up at the meeting the other night, you know, what it was like in the old days of NA and what it was like today. And so, like, maybe I was thinking about a lot of the people that, you know, are not here anymore. And I shared at that meeting, you know, I've been around here almost 20 years now, and it's kind of like what Bill was talking about when he was talking. You know, when I first got here, it was shut up, sit down, take the cotton out of your ears, put it in your mouth. If we need somebody to cop, we'll come to you, because that's all you know. And if you want to know for sure what you know, it's all written on that page right there. You know? And I don't know, it worked for me, but I don't know if that works for everybody. You know, there are some people in this fellowship that believe we've gotten too soft. And for some people, maybe I agree with that, but I do know one thing, there are more people getting clean today than ever did before. So something's working in here. I've tried to tell a lot of people, because I believe that when I make a commitment and I voice it out loud, it helps me keep it. One of the tapes I was listening to a little while ago, it was an old-timer. I think he had 30-some years, and the tape was a few years old, and he was talking about that, about how the relationships between members have changed over the years, sponsor, sponsee, sponsee family, support groups, and that kind of stuff. And he didn't agree with it all. But, you know, one of the scariest things for any addict is change. And I know for me that sometimes I don't like the new things just because they involve change. And he said that he believes, and so do I, that our literature is a crucial part of this program, and that we may not agree with all the literature, but it's our responsibility, like any tool, to learn to use it. And he had never been through the STEP working guide. I've owned one since the day they came out. I've worked them with sponsees, but I've never done one on my own. So I made a commitment that in the year 2010, I'm going to do one step a month out of that book and get it done in a year's time. Because I think I owe that not only to the people I sponsor that do choose to use that book, but I owe that to myself. Because one thing that I've learned is the ability that I can continue to learn. The people in my life that have touched me in this program have shown me that. Those of us that get stuck in our old ways get stuck in the old ways. And there's one cliche that apparently on October 22nd, 97, I forgot, and it's that the same person will use again. So I need to continue to do things to change the person I am. So I made that commitment to do that step work. And truly, it's been a couple of years since I actually put pen to paper for step work. you know, I've done some situational stuff with my sponsor and, like, gone over some steps here and there, but I actually haven't put the pen to paper for that period of time. And I'm not sure if I'm going to do it on paper or I'm going to do it on a computer, because I'm a geek, and I like the computer stuff, and you can buy the workbook on disk and do it right on the computer. The only reason I still think maybe pen to paper is better, because I don't want to go back and edit what I've written. Sometimes on a computer that's a little too easy. You know, one of the relationships I mentioned was that I became a father. And all it takes is a donation of sperm to be a father. But to truly be a dad is a very different thing. My son was 7 when I first got clean. And I don't know if I've ever really made total amends to him for the things I did in those first 7 years of his life. But I believe that, like, learning to live a different way and trying to show him that was part of the amends process. For a very long time, I described him as an addict that hadn't used, because he had all our behaviors. He sunk to depths that I didn't have to. He spent 90 days in the county jail here. He's been in jail in California, where he lives now. And this summer, we got a phone call. And any time a California number comes up on that phone that I don't know, my heart sinks. Because the last phone call like that I got was a collect call from the Yuba County Jail. And I answered the phone. He said, "Dad, it's Chris." I'm like, "What's up? Where are you?" He said, "I just went into rehab." I didn't even know who he was using. 3,000 miles away, it's kind of hard to tell, but I knew the behaviors were there. And God willing, a couple weeks, he'll celebrate 6 months clean. It's funny, because that was the second thing that came to my mind, the relationship I have with him. And it was a real struggle when I found out that, like, he was an addict. You know, a lot of people said, "Oh, I'm really sorry to hear that." And I said, you know, that probably was one of the best phone calls I've ever got. Because it could have been from a jail. It could have been from the county morgue. There could have been a lot worse phone calls. This was a call telling me he was going to try to follow in the footsteps that he'd seen me do, as well as many of the other people. I took him to a lot of meetings when he lived out here. He used to come up to my home group all the time. Matter of fact, he asked about, you know, a lot of the people that are in my home group. But immediately I started thinking about, like, how's this going to change our relationship? Because now it's not father-son all the time. Now sometimes that relationship is about being fellow addicts. And I still struggle with it. You know, it's been a few months of, you know, we've been doing this stuff. And, you know, he's 27 years old. I don't want to treat him like a little kid. But I kind of want to treat him like a newcomer, you know. You know, sometimes I just want to yell into that phone, "Bullshit!" And sometimes I come that close. But it's funny how relationships change over time. Sometimes they change even without me thinking that they're going to change or making any effort to change them. I go back to the relationship with my wife. She stuck by me through all those years of active addiction. I was a late bloomer. I didn't start using until well into college. So she was with me from day one. And, of course, like a lot of those codependent people we tend to hook up with, she lived in her own little denial for a long time. And until it got to be a point where she could take no more. And she told me I had to do something. And just to make life easier for her, I decided I'd go to counseling. And probably one of the best decisions she ever made for me. Because that's what began this journey. And you know what? over all the years, our relationship has changed tremendously. And sometimes I think it's just because we're getting old. But like, you know, today, there are times when we just sit home and watch a movie. And it's something I didn't know how to do before, to sit down and just kind of like let the moment be. You know, our steps tell us that prayer and meditation are an important part of this program. And I grew up, I was raised Catholic. I'm a recovering Catholic. I got kicked out of the altar boys, so I'm not sure how recovered I was at that point. They told me, they accused me of trying to set the church on fire. It wasn't really, but... yeah. And I sort of thought I understood what prayer was about. Like, I knew... When I was an altar boy, I learned to say the Mass in three different languages, and I knew prayers in different languages and stuff like that. And I thought I knew what prayer was about, and I found out, like, I knew very little about that. But the part on meditation was a part that I never knew anything about. And one of the blessings that our predecessors were able to receive that message from God, that you get to pick your God in here. And the way I got that was through the relationships of other members. When I started really trying to find the spiritual part of this program, I started reaching out to other people and finding out what they did. And so I became exposed to a lot of different religions, faiths, spiritual ways of life, and that's where I've developed this relationship with the God of my understanding. And part of that was this Eastern-type belief, and their spiritual programs very often involve meditation. Matter of fact, one of the speakers I was listening to recently was talking about he went to India to learn meditation techniques. And luckily, I didn't have to go that far. I only had to go to Indiana, not India, because that's where my home group's at now. For 12 years, my home group was in Altoona, and for the last 8, it's been up in Indiana. And, you know, those people have come into my life and taught me what it's like to be able to sit still, listen, and just be there. And the ability to listen, you would think, comes when you're born. 2 ears and only one mouth, so you should listen twice as much as you talk. But there's a big difference between hearing and listening. And the people that I turned to who had... And I see, I believe everyone brings different resources. You know, Eric mentioned about the diversity of our fellowship, and I think that's truly one of the huge strengths we have, is that we all have different talents. You know, it's weird, because we are all completely different, yet we're all alike. But those differences are the strengths and weaknesses we bring here and are able to share with each other in those intimate relationships. And I think one of the best meetings is the 15 minutes after the meeting, because that's when I get to talk one-on-one with individual people. And sometimes it's somebody that said something during the meeting that kind of touched my heart, or else just brought a question to mind. And I get a few minutes to spend with them before we get back on the road to go home to share a part of what this recovery has done for our life. And that ability to sit back and be part of and just be there and enjoy the moment is probably one of the better gifts I've received from this fellowship. You know, very often when people get jammed up, they tell us to write gratitude lists, and I'm one that passes on that information. But every time I've tried to do it, I get overwhelmed. Because I can't begin, I don't have enough paper in my house to write the things that I'm grateful for, if I'm being honest. You know, it's really easy to say I'm grateful I got a new car, you know, I got this and that. But the ability to be me that was given to me by the people who I've developed that one-on-one relationship with is probably one of the things I am most grateful for this program. You know, they say we come here to learn a new way to live, and that is a totally different way than I ever lived my life before. It's really weird because I only know maybe about half the people in this room, yet I feel a connection with everyone who walks through that door. There's no place else I go that I feel as at home as when I'm in a meeting. I've been at my job for 28 years, I know all the people. We have 2,000 people working at institution, and I know almost all of them. But there's many times when I'm there and I feel alone. Every now and then when I'm at home, although I have 3 dogs, so I'm never really alone at home either. Sometimes when I'm in my house, I kind of feel a little alone. And, you know, I usually reach out to my higher power at that point, because I know that's the time when something's quiet and some message might be there for me. But the one place I never feel alone is when I'm in an NA meeting, an NA function. I was talking to someone earlier today about next year's Unity Retreat Committee, and he told me he wasn't sure if he was going to get involved with the committee or not this year. And I told him, I said, you know what? Unity Retreat number 2 was the very first NA event I ever attended. I'd been in this fellowship almost 9 years at that point, but I had never attended an NA event. As a matter of fact, at one point I thought NA only existed in Altoona. I didn't think it was anywhere else. I thought it was this kind of unique thing that Altoona came up with. I knew there was somewhere in California we sent away to get key tags and stuff like that, but back then we didn't have an area and we weren't involved with region, so I didn't understand how far-reaching this fellowship is. But today I find that the people that walk in these rooms, whether they have a day clean, a decade clean, or more than half their life clean, all come here for the same reason, to get one more day. I don't know if I'm going to use tomorrow, but I know the things I've done today make it a really good chance that I'm not going to use today. I heard a speaker say that the shower I took yesterday doesn't get me clean today. So the meeting I go to today may not be the one that I need to keep me clean tomorrow. You know, I've heard it a few times, and one of my first sponsors told me that. I told him, like, life was getting real busy again. It's funny, because I'm talking to some newcomers lately, and they said they're so bored. They have nothing to do. I'm like, keep coming back, man. Your life will get filled up. Because there aren't enough hours in the day for me anymore. And life was getting to that point, and I told him, I said, like, I need to cut back on meetings. And I said, like, you know, I live in the middle of nowhere, so it's at least a half hour to a meeting. It takes me almost an hour to get to my home group each direction. So going to meetings is a commitment of time for me. And I need to cut back. And he said, well, you know, I can't determine how many meetings you need. He said, but if you're anything like me and you used every day, you maybe should think about going to a meeting every day. And, you know, my life doesn't allow that to happen on a regular basis anymore, but every now and then I'll hit multiple days in a row at a meeting, and I can just feel my spirit being built, being bolstered by the people that walk in the room. That's the loving relationship I've been looking for all my life. And by learning that relationship in here, I've been able to carry that relationship outside these rooms. See, I think NA meetings are kind of like training grounds. It's like when you go to boot camp, you learn shit here. Recovery isn't actually here. This is where I learn about it. I get to practice it here. When I walk out that door into the real world, now I have a chance to see if I have recovery or not. Because you know what? I bet I can walk up to anybody in this room and call them everything but a child of God, and they're going to still love me. Try that at Cheeks tomorrow. Ain't going to work. Ain't going to work. You know, in some ways, I think we get spoiled by the relationships we have in here, because they truly are an unconditional love. But I think given the opportunity to share that with people in the real world, they see that in us. I remember my home group was down in Altoona years ago, and the one of the members of the church came up to me after the meeting, and a couple of weeks before they had found some syringes in the alleyway behind the church, and I was pretty sure we were getting kicked out, and he said, the elders want to meet with you on Sunday. So, like I've been taught by some people, I immediately got on the phone, I called our current PI committee, and I said, can you guys come down? And a few of them got in cars, some from Johnstown, some from Somerset, some from Indiana, and they all showed up there on Sunday morning. And that church wasn't that big. They only had about 80 members, and about 60 of them stayed after that time. And like I said, I thought we were getting kicked out. And instead, what they said is, the reason we're here today is people want to know why there's more people here on Wednesday night than there is on Sunday morning. So the people that showed up did a PI presentation about what this fellowship was about. And they told me that this was a Presbyterian church, and they said they believe that their faith tells them that they have to give back to the community. And that, when, I remember we used to meet at the hospital I work at, and when trauma services came in, we got kicked out of the hospital. We searched around for a meeting place for a long time. And we were in and out and moving around, and that really makes it hard to keep the meeting stable. And we found this church, and we decided to stay there. And at the time, we approached the pastor, and she said to us, she said, well, she said, I have a country line dance group, and I have choir practice on Wednesday night. She said, but I also have a very large church, and you're welcome here. And I told the people that, you know, when we applaud for that, for those key tags and stuff, I hope it doesn't bother their choir practice or their line dancing. And they said, no, it lifts our hearts to know that there's people upstairs learning how to live a new way. I said to them, I said, well, you know, the choir met in the room behind us, and they would walk through our meeting sometimes when they showed up late. And I told them, I said, when you walk through that room and you turn, you smile to the people sitting in those seats, that just might be the first smile they've had in many, many months. And he said, when they smile back at us, it touches our heart too. So if you have the opportunity to spread the relationship love that you've learned here to people outside this fellowship, I encourage you to do so. I know it's changed my life. It's not always what I expect. Sometimes I am rejected. I figure that's their loss. Because I know for a fact that without the love that I find in these rooms, whether I stayed clean or not, it wouldn't be worth living. But with the love of this fellowship, the God of my understanding, and the people that He's put into my life, I can enjoy the rest of my life one day at a time. That's all I got. Thanks. Let me share.